Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
We begin our program today with news on election results in Iran. Mario Ritter reports.
President Hassan Rouhani and his supporters have won most of the seats for a group that chooses Iran's top religious leader. Rouhani and his allies, considered moderates, won 15 of the 16 seats held by the capital city Tehran on Iran's 88-member Assembly of Experts. The results of the election were announced Monday. They are seen as a rejection of conservatives, including Ayatollah Mohammad Yazdi. He was not re-elected as head of the assembly. Voters also chose members of Iran's 290-seat parliament. Official results are expected Monday or Tuesday. Unofficial results show reformers and moderates winning all of Tehran's 30 parliamentary seats. Conservatives are winning in rural areas. Rouhani said Saturday the election has given the government more power to move forward on the agreement reached with Western powers to limit Iran's nuclear activities. Iran's state-run news agency reported that Rouhani said, "The competition is over. It's time to open a new chapter in Iran's economic development based on domestic abilities and international opportunities." Rouhani strongly supported the nuclear agreement. Experts say the election results are a sign that Iranians support the agreement. Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei called on the winners of the elections to act in the interests of Iran and reject the influence of others. I'm Mario Ritter.
A ceasefire in Syria is underway, but frail. The calm in Syria was broken Sunday when 6 villages were hit by airstrikes, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a British-based human rights organization. The identity of the jets was not known. It was unclear if the raids hit areas covered by the truce. Militants from the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda-linked forces in Syria are not part of the ceasefire. Russia blamed Turkey for 9 violations, according to the French news agency AFP. The Syrian state media claimed terrorist groups fired mortars close to the Turkish border. A senior Saudi Arabian official alleged Syrian and Russian forces have committed violations in Syria. The United States and its partners targeted the Islamic State terror group Saturday and Sunday. U.S. President Barack Obama said the Islamic State's territory in Syria is shrinking. He said the number of Islamic State fighters in the field is decreasing. The reduced numbers, the president said, are because the jihadists are having problems recruiting to refill the fighting ranks. The temporary truce went into effect Friday. members of the United Nations Security Council, endorsed the deal. One United Nations diplomat called the weekend ceasefire reassuring. In other news, United States Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas shocked everyone during a court session on Monday. He asked several questions for the first time in 10 years. The Associated Press reported that the sound of Thomas's voice drew gasps from some lawyers watching the Monday session. The case was an appeal by two men who say their guilty pleas for hitting their partners should not bar them from owning a gun. With about 10 minutes left in an hour-long hearing, U.S. Justice Department attorney Ilana Eisenstein was about to sit down. She noted there did not seem to be any further questions from the Supreme Court justices. "Ms. Eisenstein, one question," Thomas said. Justice Thomas then asked if a misdemeanor violation of domestic conduct should result in a lifetime ban on the right to own a gun. Eisenstein responded that Congress moved in 1996 to ban people who attack their partners from having a gun because they pose a greater risk of killing by a gun their family member. Michael Fletcher, who co-wrote a 2008 biography on Thomas, said the recent death of his conservative court ally, Antonin Scalia, might have prompted him to ask questions. Scalia tended to ask more questions than any other justice. Unlike Scalia, Fletcher said, Thomas does not seem to enjoy confrontations with his ideological opposites. Fletcher's book on Thomas was called Supreme Discomfort, The Divided Soul of Clarence Thomas. Next, Katie Weaver tells us all about the 88th Academy Awards, also known as the Oscars.
There was more excitement about the discussion of diversity than the red carpet or the Oscars at the 2016 Academy Awards on Sunday night. Host Chris Rock's funny monologue did not soften the conversation, but sharpened the racial issues in Hollywood instead. His opening lines set the tone. He welcomed the audience to the Academy Awards, in his words, otherwise known as the White People's Choice Awards. He also said he thought about quitting the position of host after all the controversy over the lack of diversity. But he said he could not lose another job to Kevin Hart, another black comedian and actor. Some entertainers boycotted the Oscars because there were no people of color among acting nominees. That was true last year as well. Chris Rock took aim at both sides. Jada Pinkett Smith was the de facto leader of the boycott of the 2016 Oscars. She tweeted that she was angry her husband, Will Smith, did not get nominated for his work in Concussion. Rock said Sunday night that it was also unfair Will Smith got paid $20 million to star in Wild Wild West. The 1999 movie was a critical and financial failure. Rock also questioned Jada Pinkett Smith's boycott of the Oscars. "Isn't she on a TV show?" he asked, suggesting she was not invited to the movie awards. Throughout the show, producers included references to the lack of diversity in Hollywood. A montage of some of the nominated movies replaced white actors with black actors. The crowd laughed the loudest at the sight of Tracy Morgan playing the Danish girl. Actress Leslie Jones took part in a spoof of The Revenant and screams, there are no actresses in this movie. This year's competition did not appear as heated as in some past Oscars. Spotlight was seen as having a pretty good chance at winning Best Picture, and it did. Many critics and movie fans believed that Leonardo DiCaprio had to win the Best Actor award for The Revenant, and he did. It was the actor's sixth Oscar nomination, but the first time he left with the Academy Award. Best Actress went to Brie Larson for playing a young woman held captive for years in Room. Mark Rylance of Bridge of Spies won Best Supporting Actor. Best Supporting Actress went to Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl. And the leader of The Revenant, Alejandro González Iñárritu, won the Oscar for Best Directing. It was his second win in a row. Last year, he took the trophy home for his film Birdman. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences honored Son of Saul with the Oscar for Best Foreign Film. The Hungarian movie tells of 2 days in the life of a Hungarian prisoner working at the Auschwitz death camp. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Few people would disagree that email makes our lives easier. But misusing email can cause problems. And I'm not talking about hitting the reply all button when you didn't mean to. Answering all those emails and processing all that information can overload the brain, causing stress. So says the Future Work Center, a business based in London. This company carries out psychological research on people's experiences in their workplaces. The center's Richard McKinnon was the lead writer of a report on messaging habits. He calls email a double-edged sword. In other words, email can be both good and bad. Americans also use the saying, cuts both ways, for something like a double-edged sword. But back to the culture of emailing. Emails provide a really useful way to communicate, but they could add to tension in the mind, causing stress. Come rain or shine, some office workers are under pressure to read and answer emails all day long. Jonathan Rowe has an office job in London. His complaint is a common one, too many emails. He says reading work emails when you're at home blurs the boundaries between work and leisure.
Just general day-to-day pressure to be available all the time, to answer emails all the time, to perhaps eat into people's leisure time and blur the boundaries between work and leisure.
Psychologists are concerned about the pressure that workers bring on themselves. Dr. Richard McKinnon spoke with VOA News on Skype. He says that email can be a valuable time-saving communication tool, but it can also be a source of stress and even anger for many of us. He adds that the stress does not come from the number of emails you get. The problems result from when and how you deal with them. According to the study, there are two very stressful email behaviors. One is leaving email on all day and never signing off. The other is reading and answering emails early in the day and late at night.
Checking your email very early in the morning or checking in at late at night or leaving your email on all day. That has a much stronger relationship with email pressure. So it's not necessarily about how many emails we receive.
But not all jobs are equally stressed by email. The jobs most affected by email stress are marketing, public relations, media, and information technology. Educational experts have also written several reports on how email overloads are stressing out teachers. McKinnon says bad email behaviors are linked to higher levels of stress in office workers. The Future Work Center report gives several suggestions on avoiding email stress. Use email with a plan. Do not just react to endless email alerts. If you use an email application or app on your device, close it down when you want to be left alone. Use your out-of-office reply more often. If you need to communicate with a coworker, call, or, better still, walk to their office and talk about it. Be careful with the reply all option. For example, if you are accepting an invitation to attend training, just write back to those who need to know. Trust me, other workers on that mailing list will thank you. And accept the fact that if a matter is urgent, your employer will call you about it. The Future Work Center report claims that in 2014, people sent an estimated 196.3 billion emails. The average adult spent more than an hour a day answering emails. Email is certainly not going anywhere, so it is important to control your emails and not the other way around. I'm Anna Mateo.
This is What's Trending Today. Happy Leap Day, everyone! That seemed to be on the minds of Twitter, Facebook, and Google users everywhere on Monday, February 29th. The hashtag Leap Day was the top trending topic on Twitter Monday morning, with almost 150,000 mentions. Google is known for greeting users on its search engine page with something called a Google Doodle. It celebrated Leap Day with an animation of a rabbit leaping between two other sleeping rabbits. One was marked 1 for March 1st. The other was marked 28 for February 28th. People all over the world clearly enjoyed posting photos to Twitter and Facebook of different things known for their leaping ability. Frogs, squirrels, cats, and other animals jumped all day long. But here are some creative leaping things that caught our eye. First, the Juventus soccer team from Italy made a video of their star goalie, Gianluigi Buffon, leaping to prevent shots from making it into the goal. The American Ballet Theatre posted a photo of a pair of ballerinas in mid-flight. Major League Baseball got in the act with some of the amazing catches its players made last season. Even NASA posted a photo explaining why leap year is a necessity. If you did not know, it is because it takes 365.25 days for the Earth to circle the Sun. So every 4 years, the calendar has an extra day to make up for the difference. But perhaps the most fun Leap Day message came in relation to Leonardo DiCaprio's Oscar win on Sunday night. After multiple nominations over the years, DiCaprio won his first Oscar for his role in the movie The Revenant. The Huffington Post said that he had to wait for a leap year to win so he could have an extra day to celebrate. And that's What's Trending Today. I'm Dan Friedel.
Earlier this year, we introduced you to the top American destinations on the rise. The expression on the rise means that something is becoming better or more popular. This week, we take on the world. The travel website TripAdvisor used traveler reviews to choose its top 10 world destinations on the rise. The list represents 10 cities that saw the biggest increase in positive traveler reviews in the past year.
The number one pick, Tulum, Mexico. The seaside city is on Mexico's Caribbean coast. It is known for its beaches, warm, clear waters, and Mayan ruins. Tulum was one of the last cities built by the ancient Mayans, the pre-Columbian culture in Mesoamerica and Central America. Beyond the city's beaches and Mayan sites, Tulum is also famous for diving and snorkeling. Adventurous travelers can explore caves and underground rivers.
The number two destination on the rise also sits along the Caribbean coast. The Colombian city of Cartagena has a walled historic old town, beautiful colonial architecture, and famous beaches like Boca Grande. Cartagena's old town is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The city is a great place to try ceviche, a South American dish of marinated raw fish or seafood. But there is more to Cartagena than the historic town and nearby beaches. Tourists can also visit a nearby mud volcano. It is a 15-meter-tall mud bath that locals believe has healing properties.
The number three world destination on the rise is also a seaside city. Porto, Portugal, sits on the Atlantic coast. Its old town is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The Douro River flows by the city on its way to the sea. The Douro River Valley is known for its high-quality wine. Its most famous is port. Port wines are sweeter and higher in alcohol content than most wines. Above the Douro River is one of Porto's most iconic sites, the Dom Luís Bridge, opened in 1886. A student of Gustave Eiffel, of Eiffel Tower fame, designed the bridge. The top level is for walkers. The lower level is for cars. The bridge provides beautiful views of the river and city.
The number four world pick was also America's number one destination on the rise. Gatlinburg, Tennessee is a gateway to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, the country's most visited national park. Gatlinburg offers excellent hiking and fishing. Its 100-meter-tall Gatlinburg Space Needle provides views of the surrounding Smoky Mountains.
Moscow, Russia is number five. Russia's capital city of 10 million is the political, historical, and economic center of the country. The famous Red Square is just the beginning of the city's architectural wonders. The buildings that surround Red Square include Lenin's Mausoleum, the colorful St. Basil's Cathedral, and the churches and palaces of the Kremlin. A 10-minute walk from Red Square is one of the world's most famous theaters, the Bolshoi. Visitors can attend a Russian ballet or opera performance. The Bolshoi Ballet Company has performed for hundreds of years. It was established in 1776.
Number 6 is Brighton, England. This English Channel beach town is less than an hour by train from London. The railway between London and Brighton was completed in 1841. The city soon became a popular getaway spot. Brighton joined together with the neighboring town of Hove in 1997 to form one city, Brighton and Hove. It is England's largest seaside resort town. Visitors enjoy the water, the entertainment on Brighton Pier, and good weather.
The 7th world destination on the rise is New Delhi, India. British architects designed India's huge capital in the 1930s. It is one of 11 areas of Delhi. New Delhi represents modern India, but it also has a lot of historic sites. New Delhi's Red Fort was the center of India's Mughal rule from the 1600s to the middle 1800s. Today, it houses many world-class museums. Nearby is Chandni Chowk, one of the city's largest and oldest markets.
Number 8 is Banff, Canada. Banff is surrounded by the towering Canadian Rocky Mountains. The resort town sits within Banff National Park, Canada's first national park. Skiers come in the winter to take on the steep slopes of the Rockies. The town is south of the picturesque, mirror-like Lake Louise, a Banff National Park icon. The area is home to wildlife like grizzly bears and elk.
9th on the list is Lima, Peru. The Peruvian capital is a mix of energy and history. Visitors can explore ancient Incan ruins, study Spanish colonial architecture, or experience Lima's nightlife. The Pacific Ocean is nearby, as are beachside restaurants and hotels. Although it is a coastal city, Lima is actually the world's second driest capital city, after Cairo, Egypt.
The 10th and final world destination on the rise is Brazil's Iguazu Falls. Iguazu Falls sits along the border of Brazil and Argentina. The park area is the country's second most visited destination. The park's most famous waterfall, Devil's Throat, is actually 14 waterfalls that come together. Along with huge waterfalls, the park is home to many different animals, including howler monkeys, butterflies, endangered jaguars, and big anteaters. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.